I've been having a very interesting experience since I came into the room. As a number of you know, I was silenced a number of years ago, and I've been asked to speak about my nearness to God. But today, you may actually experience my experience of my nearness to Allah. Because sometimes I go into a state where water just starts to fall out of my eyes. And that's been happening this morning. So fortunately, I planned a meditation for us, so if I'm not really able to speak, that's what we'll do. But I wanted to say a little something about abiding in the silence, which for me is a state of being where you surrender into your heart. You take your awareness and you just drop it into your heart, and you just rest there and be. And from that place, an activity happens, and you're able to serve Allah. People sometimes ask how I arrived at this state of abiding in Allah. And I would say it was through an agreement which came through an experience that I had where I was on the floor and my forehead was touching the ground, and I was asked if I would never lift my head again, and I said yes. So I stay in this surrendered state now, or in this state of abiding in the silence. So today, I would like us to sit in meditation and see if we can all bring our awareness into our hearts and just be in that silence that for me is Allah. I sit with an intention. And there are many intentions. The first one I ever sat with came to me through intuition. And the first one was, Grandmother, Great Mystery, hear my voice. I send my voice to you. I am here. And I just sat and patiently waited. Not exactly sure for what, but I waited. Now it's a little different, but it's still the same idea, that I go into a very watchful state and I wait. And I do this through intention. Sometimes I turn my heart towards Allah or the Holy Essence, or God, or the Divine, whatever, you know, you have most relation to, the Beloved. Or you can simply say, O Beloved, I am knocking at your door. May my heart be filled with the bounties and blessings of your love. Or place the cross in your heart and go and sit at the point where the two meet and just rest there and be. In this turning, you're saying yes to something. And you may not know what it is that you're saying yes to. But as you sit in this place of stillness, emptiness, being, something gets revealed to you about what this turning is. During the experience that I had that brought me into depths of understanding of God, self, and life, at some point, a dimension or an energy opened up that I call the unknown she. A peace, just a vastness where this inner and outer that we've been speaking about, there is no inner or outer in this space. This vastness, this emptiness. So perhaps if you bring your awareness or your attention, or if you turn towards your heart, you'll get a taste of what this is. So for those of you who have meditation practices, that you sit primarily with your awareness or your attention here. If you'd like to, you can, and this is the first meditation I ever did, was I took the knowledge or the truth that I felt that was real, and I brought it down into my heart and put it there to see what would happen, because I knew that there was a love that was in my heart that for some reason was not there if my truth or my awareness was seemingly up here. I mean, that's how it was for me. And also sometimes it was as if I rode my breath into my heart. So if you have a practice where breathing is very important, you just want to take one of those breaths, just dive, and just rest in that one. You may see if something different happens for you. So if you'd like, you can sit, excuse me, with the intention, oh beloved, I am knocking at your door. May my heart be filled with the bounties and blessings of your love. And you just sit there. There's no mantra, or with whatever meditation that you usually sit with. And I think we should sit for a while first, and then we'll come. come out and see if I have anything to say or not, or we can ask questions and answers. Okay. Anyone have any questions? For me, it became a place in consciousness. Am I touching it? No, I have everything away from it. Is that going to work?
Yes.
Can you hear me now? Does that sound like Verizon? It's a state in consciousness for me. And a guidance that came. A wisdom that is. That comes from within the self is gone, so I can't say that. It's the wisdom that gets revealed to you in this state of consciousness. It's a very pure state of consciousness. It's still very hard for me to speak about the unknown she, other than to talk about the emptiness and the vastness. I can use words like, she's your immaculate heart. She's you when you're in a state of pure consciousness. It's a very virgin state. No thought forms, and that's why it's very difficult to speak about. She's been referenced. She's the woman who's filled with the sun, who has the moon under her feet, and she has 12 stars on her head. Or she's from before the beginning. she was there at the creation. This eternal wisdom. There isn't a lot. It's something that you experience. You know, you're in relationship with. A nearness. It's a very intimate relationship. When she first came, you know, I could only use words like enveloped, you know. And for me, when I speak about it, I can't even speak about it as love. It's something, because if it would take a form, it would be more like beauty, this unbelievable beauty that is always present in whatever I see or wherever I sit, a grace, you know. So it's still really hard because we want to kind of wrap our mind around what it is, and it's in your heart. You know, you have to go and sit and be in your heart, and she will come. She's calling, come to me, come to me. In the silence of the night comes the unknown she, whispering sweetly, come dance with me. There's an invitation. Since before the beginning, come to me, come to me, come to me. She came through remembrance. You know? She's a remembering for me. Of someone I already knew, but had forgotten. If you ask, to be how you were before you were born, and say, come to me, come to me. You may find her in your heart. It's an innermost chamber of your heart. I have trouble with the word feminine. And when Hillary came to interview me, and we had to use words like feminine or female, or because it's genderless, just like he is genderless. So it, you know, it's hard to. Because if I say feminine, then we're really somewhere else. So.
Could you speak more about the experience of surrendering? You start speaking about this, and it seemed crazy at times, or pretty happened then and after.
again, you know, all of these things at a certain point, there aren't any words for them because they become experiential and you actually become the surrender. And I speak about that I was broken into this surrender. I didn't go willingly. I just didn't place, you know, my forehead on the ground and say, "Oh Allah, I'm surrendered." It wasn't like that at all. Broken. I was broken. You know. And every time I thought, "Okay, you can't get any more surrendered than this," you know, sure enough, there'd be something else. Until you've given everything away or everything has been taken, there's just nothing, absolutely nothing left. All your concepts are gone. Even God, my God was gone. You know, everything.
And do you have anybody to help you?
At a certain point, you are alone with the alone. And I don't know if you know what I mean when I say that. I reached a place where there were no tracks any longer. There was no path. Your teacher brings you to a certain place, and then something else happens. So up to a point, yes. And for a long time I had teachers in the unseen that helped, you know, with this breaking. But then at some point, no. But, you know, the questions, you know, ones like, you know, are you willing to never lift your head again? You know, and you say yes, but you have no idea what you just said yes to. But you say, you just keep saying yes. You know, at some point, no isn't an option for you. You know? And there's something, you begin to feel yourself near. The presence is very much alive for you. So in a way, you know, that's a type of guidance, in a way.
Did you have those three teachers as well?
Yes, I have about... Oh, I'm supposed to pass this microphone around. Oops. Okay. Okay. What was the question again? Oh, did I have earthly teachers? Yes. All of you are a teacher. Plus I had others. I have two women and one man that I would say were very influential in my unfoldment, that I would call teacher. And then I had many, 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 many other people who I would call thorns in my side that were the most beneficial for me on the path. So, yes, I did. In that, but... I speak about the teacher within that came, and that's when everything really, you know, finally I had said a yes, that there was an intervention or, you know, things started happening within, and then, and you know, other teachers came then.
So in your case, you didn't need to be in a group or to have a system, right?
I was primarily what's called self-taught. I studied something for many, many years, and I was self-taught. But I had someone, if I needed to, I could call and say things are getting a little scary out there. And, you know, we'd speak. And she didn't live anywhere close to where I did. And I kind of feel that I was to be self-taught. So in a way, I dismantled myself in a very outer kind of way. On the inner way, I was, that was taken care of someplace else. Yes?
Do you have any thoughts on, or suggestions on learning to love yourself more and learning to trust yourself more?
Do I have any suggestions for learning to love yourself more?
And learning to trust yourself.
And learning to trust yourself more. Well, I love Allah and I trust Allah. And I have faith in Allah. But I'm trying to remember if I ever had that for the self. Do you mean on the level of your personality, or? Cause
just on your path, those are blocks to moving along,
Life will move you along if you let it. It'll send you whatever curveball you need. When you sit in your heart, it'll happen that way. The transformation. And this is another thing about the unknown she. She's a transformative energy. So when you sit in it, everything is given. You know, the undoing takes place through this transmission. You just sit in your heart and you'll find the curveballs coming at you left and right. So, but if you mean by the self, see, I'm not sure what you mean by the self. I mean, if you mean you, how do you love you and how do you trust you? I'd get you out of the way and start trusting something a little higher. I mean, well, I don't know if higher is the right word, but, you know.
You said the unknown she, the closest that you could describe is this incredible beauty. I experienced the unknown she in its most purest, unadulterated, most delicious pain.
Yes, she's ruthless in your undoing. That at times, I don't know if it was in your heart, that this, yes, it can be excruciatingly painful at times. And when she comes very, very near.
Yeah, this is so, the way I can describe it, absolutely delicious,
yeah.
Absolutely pure and unadulterated,
yeah.
Pain. And in physical pain, I could explain pain, but it was something.
Yeah, and then as soon as you were, there was no pain after you, yeah. I call this the Immaculate Heart. When you were, where it's, as like I said, there's, or, you know, I refer to it also as where the sweet honey is, or you've gone to where the sweet honey is. Yeah. Yes.
Can you explain a little bit in the chapter Hillary is, you mentioned eschatology. Can you explain a little bit about what that is and how that helps you to, I got the implication from reading that, that it helps you to dismantle the Albert.
Yes, it's what I use to dismantle the outer self, I guess. It's really extremely difficult for me to speak about now, even though I used to teach. But with the experience I had, like I said, everything went. It was a contemplative practice, a metaphysics, a Gnosticism. And what I remember from it and what I still use was there was virtue work where you actually, in an outer way, through practices, bring your state, yourself to a state where you emulate, you know, patience, kindness, compassion, love, wisdom, that kind of thing. So it's a breaking down process of all your concepts that you think are real and true until you arrive at something not quite as relative as what you were entertaining before. It's a little bit scientific where it kind of I can give an example of for the experience that I had. It took a great deal of endurance and a great deal of strength, but not in the sense like I needed to be lifting that piano or, but it was a type of perseverance that I had to have. Like some of you, it's like when we're sitting in here and sometimes I sit with people for 3 days and we do absolutely nothing except sit and maybe I speak a little. You know, and on day one, everyone's fine, and by the afternoon, they're like, by the next day, they wish they had a gun and they could just shoot me, you know, that kind of thing. And they step out of the circle. They step out of the circle. And through my eschatology, I learned the strength, which is the male, and the endurance, which is the female, and when they're working together in concord and agreement, I was able, no matter what was going on, to not waver, to not step out of the circle. Or that point that I was speaking about where the cross meets, or when you're at the door, or you're turned towards your heart. And I can tell you a little bit how it is sometimes I would be in a state where I was totally gone, and then I would get punched into reality. And it actually felt like a punch. So I say I was aware in the unawareness, only words I have. And way, way in the distance, there was this golden light. And I was in pure black light. And this gold light was coming at me really fast. And I knew what was going to happen when that light hit me. So this side was going, oh, God, no. And this side was going, don't you dare move. So that's what eschatology, you know, that for me is the biggest gift. It's a, you know, a science, an elaborate system, and it's a way of understanding God's self in life. But like I said, at some point, there's still a concept, no matter how true they are, they're a concept that I held. It was a house that I had built. And at some point, I pulled one card, and the whole thing fell down. But, you know, it's important to build the house, you know. But know that it isn't home. It isn't home. My eschatology teacher is probably going, is that it? Is that the best you can do? Yeah.
What I heard you say was that you pulled one card down. Do you feel that grace was involved in that?
With what I studied, at some point, there's this concept that you reach a certain place in your unfoldment and the spirit of truth comes. So that's this card. And I took that card. And that's when everything collapsed. So you could call it grace. It has lots of names. But I really, really, really was seeking the truth that would set me free. You can be seeking the truth, but there are degrees of that seeking. And I always said I would do anything for my unfoldment, anything. So, and my life was always arranged, so that was a potential. But yes, at some point grace comes and you just move out of the way and things get taken care of. Oh, I forgot to repeat questions again. Practice.
Were you outwardly, is your life very still also? Is that mirrored outwardly or is it?
It's interesting because before the experience I had, I can't really remember what state I was really in. And I had just moved into a new place with a friend of a friend of mine. And I was spending very little time in New York, and I said, okay, I'll get a room and stay there when I'm there. And I was speaking to her the other day, and she reminded me of how I was when she met me. And it was shortly after that that I had the experience that I had. And she said, you were really quiet. I didn't know how anybody could be that quiet. And I don't think I would have thought of myself like that, but there was some quietness, some quality of quietness that I had developed within myself. So whether I was at work or at home, or it was just there. But it came through practice. You know, developing these virtues like patience, you know, It's an awareness. You know, where is your awareness? You know, is it in the chaos, or is it, you know, what's still? And I believe you have a choice to have it either place. And with a little practice, but that's how it was for me. But the chaos may be important for you. It is maybe supposed to be there. I mean, with a 4-year-old, I would think it would be kind of hard not to, you know, to keep you, you know, with him. Do you have time to sit in meditation? So you can't find a time here.
And then I can come back.
Yeah, so you do that.
But not during the day.
Yeah, most people don't have time during the day, though. But you can make your intention at any time, and whether or not you get to really sit doesn't matter. But you've remembered, you know, you remember to turn your attention towards your heart. You've remembered to knock at the door. And that's the most important thing, is your intention. You may not always be able to, you know, sit for 40 minutes, but if you just make that intention and sit for that minute, you've remembered. And that's all that's really being asked of us, is to remember.
Individual awareness, not meaning self in terms of not, but I'm just trying to understand what is the relationship between the individual awareness and this vastness. We still feel not quite separate, but as in some entity which is merged with something else, or it's just completely dissolved and there is no sense.
I think you're going to have to start over, because I'm trying to remember what you're saying so I can repeat it into this microphone, and I got lost somewhere. Okay, so I'm not going to be able to do that. Yeah. They said it moves, but it's... Okay, or whatever. Here, speak really loud.
Okay, just
it's okay. So in this experience, when she comes in the experience of annihilation, is there still individual awareness for you? Which I don't mean quite nafs and self in terms of little self, but is there still like this individual awareness and this vastness and it together, or you completely like there is nothing there?
I would say there is an awareness, but I can't say that it's coming from I. And I don't know if you know what I mean when I say that. You're aware in this state, but your identity that you call yourself by your name isn't present. But yes, you are aware. I don't know if that makes sense to you or not.
Yeah, I'm just trying to understand what annihilation is. It's like there is nothing at all, just empty space. But I think there is awareness, so clarity.
It's so dynamic, this state. It's very active. You're very aware. I mean, like she was, she said she was having pain. it's a very dynamic state. So it's an awareness, but not necessarily the awareness that you're used to having. That's, you know, you filter through I. How am I doing for time? How many? 15? Oh, okay. I didn't know if you all wanted to sit in meditation again. I mean, that's what I do with people. I don't really have a lot to say. Oh, okay. Would you like to take a break? Okay. Oh, question? Okay, this is something I never speak about, but this is a little bit about stepping outside of the circle. You want a different kind of air. Fresh, right? It's funny, when I sit with people, they usually do want to open, you know, but it is a container. And I mean, we can, and then we can just, you know. No, you don't start all over again, but there is something about a certain kind of uncomfortableness that starts to happen when you sit for a while. That is kind of part of the process. I mean, it usually, when I sit with people for 2 days or 3 days, it's much more noticeable than a couple of hours. But well, yeah, there's something going on. I mean, we're sitting here and we're chatting, but somewhere else something is going on. I mean, kind of sort of the idea of you're being worked on, you know, through this transmission that comes. I don't so much go off into states any longer. This morning I was having a bit of a moment. We had had a conversation prior to you all coming, and it kind of took me somewhere. And I had to sort of get grounded again and get back here. But I usually stay pretty much the same now, which was part of the reintegration, and I'm much more grounded now, and I don't go back and forth between the two worlds anymore. I sit in the same.
Was there help for you to come back?
Yes, yes, yes. If you mean a teaching in the form of someone giving me some knowledge or things like that, no. I just did what we're doing right now, sitting and sitting and sitting and sitting and stepping outside and seeing what happened when I did, and if it was too much, bringing myself back inside and sitting and sitting and sitting until I could really go outside again, step outside. Because I'm to be very sober, and I won't be of any use. I won't be able to sit with people or do anything if I'm. And you know, these states are hard to explain, but I'll give you a little glimpse. As you can be in a city, walking down the street, and have the city disappear on you, and you know, and you know, you can have that as your life, if. But I don't think you're of much use in that state. And there was, I made an agreement, you know, to be this sober. You know, another yes that I said yes to. To the point of, you know, it's so ordinary. You know, you know, it's just very ordinary now.
you dismantling and you're remantling? Maybe I could use this word. Were you able to care for yourself?
Yes, but not really, really well. I was very careful, very careful. And I did put myself away a little bit. And at one point I thought I would have to really put myself away someplace and just, but slowly as the integration, then it was fine. But for a while I was like, oh, this is kind of a mess that I've got myself into. And I mean, I didn't think I was going to go live in a cave in the Himalayas or anything, but it was kind of like you thought maybe that was going to be your life for a while.
But you remember to eat?
Not necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
No. But after a while, it all comes back. You just think you have to eat. Those knots.
Could you talk about the way that you are being used, what your abuse is? I think I know what it is.
This is another one of those difficult questions. I would say that something was revealed to me. That is to, well, it's already, I'm speaking about, like the work has actually already been done, and now I'm just sitting in it. Well, it's what we've been speaking about, really, about the unknown she. It's a remembrance of the mother, if you want. A remembrance of something that has been forgotten and perhaps maybe actually not even known in our concept around the mother, what we already have as our concept of the mother, but a dimension of that that we have evolved far enough in our understanding or in our evolution that this particular energy can be part of the remembrance of something that's been forgotten, the quality of she that has been missing. We're very lopsided right now. There's very little concord and agreement in our understanding.
Different colors. At the sitting, I was shown Wisteria. As we were meditating, there were two flowers that were shown. One was Wisteria, which is lavender, and the other one is bougainvillea, which is very, very bright pinkish, reddish. In your studies, have you seen what these colors indicate?
There is a science around all of this. Mm-hmm. But this container that I was talking about, that it is actually a vase, and it's to hold flowers, and people see different flowers. With different colors. And I'm assuming that you resonate with what you saw. But it has something to do with the nectar that's inside of the flower, the honey. And that's probably all I should say. So it has to do with the sweet honey. It has to do with she. Should we take a break or are we going to? Okay. You can open the door for your bathroom break. Yeah, if you, I'll go into meditation if you want, and